and welcome to episode 7 of The Office Block with me, Paul Dillon. We're the podcast for people working in banking and financial services, supported by the Financial Services Union. Thanks to everyone for their feedback to our last show, which was with Mandy Lacomber, Senior Industrial Relations Officer with the Financial Services Union. That was on the topic of bullying in the workplace, and we had a really, really strong response to that. And thanks to everyone who participated in our poll. The vast majority, of course, of people responding to our poll said that yes, employers should do much more to deal with bullying in the workplace. Before we start on the main issue of today's show, which is an interview with Gareth Murphy, Acting General Secretary of the Financial Services Union, just a word on our Finance Workers Survey. The Finance Workers Survey is now online. It's at yoursayonfinance.org. So please take the survey if you work in the sector and tweet about it at hashtag yoursayonfinance. I'm going to be talking a little bit more about that survey with Gareth in a moment. But for now, Gareth, welcome onto the show.
Thanks very much, Paul.
Gareth, you're the Acting General Secretary of the Financial Services Union. What are the big issues for the Financial Services Union and for workers in finance in 2019?
Well, there's a couple of big issues really facing finance service workers this year, and they're no surprise. They're issues that workers in the financial services really deal with on a day-to-day basis. So the main issues we would see is pay, pay transparency, how people progress, the link between pay and performance. Also then work-related stress and other mental health concerns that often accompany work-related stress, and what employers are or aren't doing to better tackle the issue of work-related stress. And then finally, really, we're talking about precarious work in finance. And by precarious work, we're not just talking about the type of contract of employment. So we hear a lot of talk about zero-hour contracts, about if and when contracts, about bogus self-employment. But really, precarious work in the financial services is about that fear of losing your job, the fear that your job will be gone in a year or two's time.
Gareth, a lot of issues there. You mentioned stress, you mentioned precarious work, you mentioned the challenge around technology, digitalization. But let's start by looking a little bit more closely at the topic of pay. What's happening, generally speaking, with pay in finance and banking?
Well, that's an interesting question, because there's a big difference between what happens in pay in unionized employments and what happens in pay in non-union employments. So let's just talk about the unionised employments for a moment. So where you have a union, your pay is negotiated by that trade union.
Yeah.
The ranges, the matrix, the link between performance, the link with cost of living is all clearly explained and communicated and made public to all employees and all members. Members of the trade union then get to actually vote to say yes or no on that pay. They get to essentially participate and influence in the shaping of their employment. And by and large, what FSU has achieved in a number of these employments, whether it's AIB, Ulster Bank, Bank of Ireland, etc., is in and around the 3% mark, sometimes above 3%, sometimes about 3% of an increase for the majority of people who are in those matrix. However, the difference is for non-union employments, pay in financial services.
Take what you're given.
Essentially, yeah. Take what you're given. What about on the shoulder at the end of the year and so told you're getting this percent.
I mean, there's endless advice out there now, Gareth, isn't there? You can get it on any number of websites about how to get a pay increase. You go in and you ask in a particular way. But ultimately, if you don't have a union voice, pay isn't particularly transparent in banking and financial services.
No, it really isn't. So often you'll ask your line manager for your range and they'll tell you, I can't disclose it, but you know, you're often too high on the range for an increase. Or you know, you're told when you're given your increase, look, pay is not something we talk about in our culture in this employment. Of course, HR and the corporate social responsibilities of these employers will say they're a wonderful employer and they're all about transparency and communication, but just by the way, don't talk to your colleagues about pay.
Yeah. And Gareth, in terms of one of the big issues that's happening in the FSU, as you mentioned, negotiating on pay is always a huge issue, and there's been quite a lot of participation in those ballots in the various employments. But can you just elaborate a little bit about the challenges? Because negotiating pay is not easy. But can you tell us how the FSU goes about negotiating those pay increases and what happens next?
Yeah, so if I take one of our large employers and take that as an example of how staff get to influence their pay and members of the union get to influence their pay, we will often do a pay survey before negotiations have commenced. And that pay survey will ask a range of questions, and members get to actually participate and influence the strategic negotiating objectives of their union committee. So the survey will tell the union negotiating committee what their members care about, what they're concerned about, what their big issues are in pay. Pay is never just as straightforward.
Yes, it's never just, here's a pay increase and that's it.
There's a whole range of issues, including, you know, the pay ranges, whether you're low or high on a range, including the relationship between performance and pay, cost of living increases, including maybe pension contributions that an employer will make. All of these things tend to come up in pay, whether some people are paid higher or lower based on their experience and when they've come into the bank. So pay is never just a straightforward, give us 2.5% or 3%. It's far more complex.
In general terms, well, you've mentioned there FSU negotiating pay increases, but in general terms, right throughout the island of Ireland, there is a challenge in keeping pay up with issues like childcare costs and housing costs. That's a general challenge for trade unions.
Yeah, it is. So the inflation figures that are quoted by the CSO or the Department of Finance, etc., never really relate to the increased cost of living that workers have had over the last number of years. So we know if you purely took rent alone, people have faced 5%, 10%, 15% increases in their rent, and yet inflation has remained around 1% or 0.5%.
Yes.
So there's a total disconnect between what is quoted and then the actual lived experience of working people, particularly when it comes to rent, but childcare as well, other bills, insurance, etc. as well. So that's a big challenge. And what happens, unfortunately, these days is employers will benchmark themselves against other employers.
Yeah.
And in the financial services, we have a section of finance unionised, that's the retail sector.
Yeah.
But they're often now benchmarked by companies like Towers Watson against the non-union sector. And that acts as a pull down and a drag down force upon the pay that we can achieve in our unionised sector. So while the pay is still largely better in the unionised sector, it's actually been dragged down by the non-union sector, which why as a union now, financial services are making a very clear statement that we are going to, over the next 3 years, we are going to grow in the greater financial services. So instead of employers dragging down pay, we can actually begin to lift it up for all.
And I think that process is underway, Gareth, because the financial services union throughout the island of Ireland is now represented in more than 50 companies. As you say, the strongest section of that is retail banking, but the most of those new employments are in the diverse financial services sector and payments. And you know, I'm just conscious of the comparison that you drew, because I think it's a worthy one. You didn't mention in the beginning, but we'll go. I want to just talk to you a little bit about KBC Bank, because you have been in the media a lot about KBC prior to Christmas and since Christmas. Can you just mention some of the issues there that you've been raising in the national media referring to KBC Bank?
Yeah, no problem. So you're right, we've been speaking up for staff in KBC. KBC Bank is a non-union bank and the employer in the Republic of Ireland.
But we have a lot of, FSU has a lot of members. But
we do have a lot of members there. And so we've been actively helping and advising them, but also speaking up on their behalf within the national media and other fora. So your listeners will probably be aware that KBC has been probably one of the more aggressive banks when it has come to questions of evictions and repossessions of homes and how they deal with arrears. And that and other issues have led to incidents that occurred prior to Christmas, including 3 arson attacks on location. So FSU has been very clear and consistent in our line. There is absolutely no excuse for putting the health and safety of our workers and members in KBC at risk because of what the corporate entity is doing. And so what we've called on the corporate entity to do is review how they deal with arrears cases, take a more Ireland-specific approach rather than a continental European approach to how you deal with these things, and make sure you protect staff.
Yeah.
And I would call on the public to make their feelings known, make their protests known by all accounts, but don't endanger the lives of working people.
And the Financial Service Union has decades of experience in dealing with these issues across the retail banking sector, be it security of staff and so on. So, I mean, you'd hope that KBC Bank does what it does everywhere else where there is a KBC Bank.
And recognise
the FSU. And of course, and we've dealt with it before, Gareth, on the show here, laws and so on and so forth. But the fundamental thing is, if the Financial Services Union is recognised throughout retail banking, and if KBC Bank recognises people everywhere it has a presence. It should recognise people in Ireland, recognise the FSU in Ireland. Can I take you back to something you said in the beginning of the show? You mentioned some of the priorities for the Financial Services Union. Can we go back and look at those again? You mentioned a project with the University of Limerick around digitalisation. You might elaborate on that.
Yeah, so one of the big issues that our members talk about and workers talk about is job security and precarious work. And the listeners will have heard a lot about precarious work in the last number of years. And quite rightly, what jumps to their mind is the question of zero-hour contracts, if and when contracts, etc. Yeah. But actually, the better definition of precarious work is just that fear of your job going and that ability of an employer to pull your job away from you. And so workers in financial services are actually in quite a precarious situation. Although they're on full-time, largely full-time, permanent, secure contracts, what you might describe as secure contracts, they actually are quite precarious currently because of the advance and development of technology and digitalization and artificial intelligence and how that threatens, if unleashed without human influence, control and social influence over how technology is used, that will replace jobs. It left to itself, technology will replace jobs. However, technology controlled and influenced and shaped by unions, by consumers, by the state, doesn't mean it necessarily has to replace jobs.
And I suppose, you know, I'm conscious of the, we were just chatting before the show, the project that you're involved in, or that the FSU is involved in, involves Dr. Michelle O'Sullivan, who we had on the show before, Dr. Caroline Murphy, both down in the Kemmy School of Business and the University of Limerick. But I would imagine that technology and the threat that technology can take your job is used to discipline the workforce.
Very much so, yeah. So we've taken the approach, we've partnered up with the University of Limerick and a number of academics, including the ones you've mentioned, who are embarking on a year-long project with ourselves on looking at how technology interacts with workers and what situations in work does it create? How does it affect your job? How does it affect your experience of work? And will it ultimately, or do you fear that it will ultimately lead to a replacement? Because as a union, we have flagged to our main employers that we want to talk to them about new technology agreements for the sector, that we want them to commit that technology won't necessarily replace jobs, that technology should be used to enhance and empower workers in their jobs rather than straitjacket or at worst actually replace jobs. So there's legitimate fear out there and we're going to try and address it. We're going to try and use some quality research from the University of Limerick to approach employers about these new technology agreements. And as I say, we've started that conversation with a number of big employers within banking, and we're going to do a lot more of that over the year.
So that's technology agreements potentially?
Absolutely.
Saying what an obligation employers should have.
Yeah, and also talking to some of our political parties and politicians about how relevant legislation, for example, Health and Safety Act, for example, Redundancy Act, can they be strengthened with the threat of technology coming? Can we strengthen them to give workers a bit more of a balanced playing field with their trade unions in terms of dealing with these challenges? So we know techno-stress, it's something our delegates at our conference back in May passed a motion on. We know techno-stress, which is work-related stress related to your interaction with technology. Probably the biggest common thing there is using your iPhone in the evenings, using your iPhone or Samsung or smartphone or whatever over the weekend, because it's there, you've got work coming in 24/7 and you just feel that pull to actually do a few emails because, you know, I'll have a slightly easier Monday when my emails aren't filled up. And we know that's a massive, massive challenge. What we also know is, and what our finance worker survey that you mentioned earlier on, I expect is going to demonstrate, because we know this anecdotally, is that working hours in unionised employments are significantly better and more humane than they are in the non-union financial services. We have seen contracts of employment in the non-union sector that actually say the minimum expected hours you'll do is a 37-hour week. Yeah. And that is basically, it's almost an if and when contract from 37 hours up to the legal organisation working time act.
Yeah.
And that's only if the employer is abiding by the legislation. We also know that employers will actually skirt the legislation. So you could be expected to work between 37 and 50, 55 yes. hours a week. And a lot of that additional hours is done at home yeah. based on tablets and yeah. smartphones, etc.
And that has an impact on stress. It has an impact on family life and it has an impact on social life, and all those factors are important. Let's talk a little bit more about the Finance Workers Survey. It's available now on the Financial Services Union website, or you'll see it on theofficeblock.org. You'll also see it on yoursayonfinance.org. But tell me just a little bit more about the survey, what's in it and what's it about, and what do you hope to achieve through running this survey?
So the survey really is to discover and find out about working life in the financial services and the lives of financial service workers. So it is primarily looking at basic condition questions like your working hours, your pensions, your pay, you know, those kind of very basic terms and conditions. But it also then looks at slightly broader, and it looks at what's your life like in society. So what about your rental situation? What about your commute times in and out of work?
Yeah.
So it's taken a more of a whole lived experience of the financial services worker. What we want to be able to do is contrast some of the working conditions between unionized environments and non-unionized environments, because we do believe there's a disparity between those two subsectors, let's say, of the financial services. We believe that working conditions in the unionised sector are significantly better than the non-union sector, and we do want to pull the non-union sector up to the best practice and best standards rather than have the unionised sector pulled down.
And the survey is compiled by Colin Whitson, former Vice Dean of the National College of Ireland, with support from the members of the Kemi School of Business, which we referred to earlier in the show. So your participation is anonymous, and the data won't be shared. But we're really encouraging people, as you know, as employees of the FSU, as you know, Office Block participants today, to take part in that survey.
That's right, yeah. So Colin is a very experienced industrial relations and human resources academic, worked in both Ireland and in Britain. He would have written many, many academic pieces over the years on working conditions and life in employment and various new trends. So we're delighted to have Colin supported by the Kemi School academics as well. To do this, yeah, I think people should fill it out and complete it, because it's going to help actually influence and shape their work in the future. As you say, it's going to be anonymous and confidential, and your data will be held in conjunction with GDPR, etc.
Yeah.
All of that will be respected,
and
this is an opportunity for finance workers
to have their voice heard,
to have a voice to tell us, but also to tell the media, because we will release results around different statistics. So you're getting an opportunity to shape the conversation about your own working experience.
So it's an old school workers' inquiry method for the modern era, and we'll be using it to raise really important issues: rights at work, hours, contracts, and all those issues that affect finance workers.
Yeah, so we'll be talking to employers and we'll be talking to politicians with the results to try and make a difference and make a change.
Excellent. Gareth, just in terms of, you know, wrapping things up for today, just in terms of the Financial Services Union, the union is now 101 years old. Incredible achievement, Gareth. How do you see the next 100 years?
Well, to be honest, first of all, it's a tribute. It's 100 years old because of workers in finance.
Yeah.
Workers in banking in particular, 100 years ago, 101 years ago, decided that their voice was going to be louder if they combined together in their own organisation or association. And that by combining together, much like every other sector, that combining together, they'd be able to improve their lot in society and in life and win better working conditions. So as far as I'm concerned, wherever you have workers, you have trade unions. Wherever you have bank workers, you'll have trade unions. Bank and finance workers are organised in Ireland, in Britain, in Australia, New Zealand, in India, in Africa, in Singapore. You know, wherever you have bank workers, you'll have a bank union. We have 100 years of history behind us, or 101 years of history behind us, and I have absolutely no doubt but we have 100 years ahead of us as an independent and progressive trade union. Our members and delegates came together at a conference a number of years ago and evolved and shaped the union from what was IBUA, the finance union, a very bank-specific union, into the financial services union. And then this year at conference, they gave us a very clear mandate to grow the union, to bring the union into the greater financial services so that we can not just secure our own future, but far more importantly, we can improve the lives of working people who currently don't have a trade union.
And you mentioned in the beginning of the show the Member Advice Centre, which is part of those plans, Gareth.
Yeah, so we're going to be, another initiative we're taking this year is going to be to launch a Member Advice Centre, which pretty much will be a way for financial service workers across all of the companies, even if it's a non-union company, but they're a member of the union. We will always be at the end of web chat, WhatsApp messages, phone lines, etc. They will always have someone to ring, to chat with, to get guidance and advice on their working life. So even if your employer won't recognise us as a trade union for collective bargaining, we will be there to represent, guide and assist you. But obviously our aim is to secure collective combinations, yeah, collective bargaining and organisations and structures for workers in the greater financial services.
Gareth Murphy, pleasure to have you on the show. We'll hope to have you back again. No doubt we will.
Absolutely, no problem.
But for now, Gareth Murphy, Acting General Secretary of Financial Services Union, thank you for joining us on The Office Block. We've had a big response so far to the Finance Workers Survey, so thanks to everyone who has filled it out so far. You can do so at yoursayonfinance.org, or you can find the survey as well on theofficeblock.org, and the hashtag is yoursayonfinance. So our poll this month is the Finance Workers Survey, and please do participate. Thanks as always for joining us on The Office Block. Remember to stay in touch with us on social media. We're at the OB Tweets on Twitter. Search The Office Block on Facebook and Instagram. Our next episode, episode 8, will be with Susie Byrne on disability in the workplace and related issues. But until then, thanks for listening to The Office Block.